हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Maybe it's today or tomorrow?
We all signed with tomorrow.
Oh, so for both days?
Yeah, today, tomorrow, and Monday, mostly.
Okay. Okay. So Bhakti Sandarbha Adhyayana 1 to Adhikarana 1, description of the Bhakti Yoga process, page 23. Srila Prabhupada further elucidates on this verse in the book Dharma as follows. As mentioned earlier, when one engages in devotional service to Krishna, knowledge and detachment automatically come. But as the present verse states, one must perform that devotional service by following the injunctions of the Vedic literatures. Srila Rupa Goswami confirms this in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.101. Right, so you can understand that this is a very fundamental principle in that. No? Because it's 101. It means whenever you start any advanced education, the first course is always 101. So basics of Bhakti 101, so here it is. Shruti Smiti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidim Vina Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpatayaiva Kalpate. Devotional service of the Lord that ignores such authorized Vedic literatures as the Upanishads, Puranas, and Narada Pancharatra is simply a disturbance in society. So you see, is that this is where you take your foundation from. It's from the scriptures, like we're seeing in Nyaya. You have to have pramana, means you have your pramanas, means what is your evidence, what establishes what you do. And so then it can either be by what you see, by what you feel about what you see, or what the scriptures say. You know, what authority is saying. So then by taking what the scriptures say, because it's coming from infallible sources, it always works. We, due to our impurities, may not see how it works, but if we have that understanding and try to, you know, what we're given, we try to follow it with the best understanding that we have on the principles, then we'll get somewhere. Otherwise, if we make up our own, means in other words, the Vedic literature is saying one thing of how you deal with things and how, you know, how the personal, how the occasional, how the social, economic, administrative, all these things, how they work. And if you follow that, you know, especially if you start with the principles, because sometimes details you can't always get. You know, they're not always available, or they're available but not necessarily in their ideal forms. So if you have that, then you can progress, and as things are there, or as you understand, you can conclude it. But if you start from the contemporary socio-political economic platform, and then from that, then try to establish, that's the authority. In other words, when your optas, or the people who, you know, by their speaking it's authority, are all, you know, malechas and yavanas, basically, who are not properly following the human form of life, then you're going to actually, whatever you come up with will be simply a disturbance in society. It's that simple. You can say, no, it's not like that. No, it's Krishna's creation. He made it the way it is. You don't follow the Shruti Smriti Puranani Pancharatra Vidhi. You don't follow that. It will go south. And I don't mean like down to, you know, Karnataka and stuff. I mean, you know, off the bottom of the page. You know, when it says off the charts, we're not meaning up. We're meaning down. Right? So it's very important that we appreciate that it has to come from this. Then, of course, you practically apply it into your area, but you can't not start with the scriptures. You can't start with modern society and say, oh, well, they're doing this, so we have to do this. Because they're doing so much nonsense, we're going to do that also. You know? It's just, well, you know, where do you start? So then, what do you come down to? Then somebody's saying, oh, this is important because modern society, but if you actually check, it is their particular conditional attachments to what they consider, you know, valuable in modern society. Not what is modern society. Because modern society is so varied. So that you have from complete anarchists, you know, on one end, to complete animals on the other end, and then in between you have all kinds of, you know, social and political, economic varieties of how they like to deal, religious things, this and that. So there's no question that there's this one, you know, common, homogenous, you know, well-supported, well-established, perfectly, what do you call it, viable, getting the perfect results, everything is flourishing and all that, and if we don't get on, you know, jump on board, we're going to lose out. No, it's a complete mess. It's like going out into the jungle and saying, oh yeah, so, you know, the rule of the jungle is, you know, whoever's bigger eats whoever's smaller. That's all. That's the only thing out in the jungle. But to say is, no, we're out in the jungle, so it's monkey culture is the culture. No, it's actually sloth culture is the culture, you know, and that, you know, do you ever hear of lions and tigers eating sloths? You know, even though they're so slow, but they're up in the tree and they're hanging upside down, how do you get at them? Even if you climb up the tree, you can't get at them. You know, it's just, you know what I'm saying? It's just, how do you define? Oh, no, it's the lion, he's the king of the jungle and all that. No, yeah, but, you know, what about, someone else says, no, it's the warthogs. You know, and stuff like this. And so you can go on and on which one it is. And you can say, well, if there's no trees, they're actually the king, because if there's no trees, it's just desert. And then would any of these animals be there? Not one. I mean, literally. So then, you know, how does it go? You know, and then you come back, well, but why are the trees? Because there's rain. So that means because there's Indra. And then why is Indra there? Because Brahma's there. And why is Brahma? Because Krishna's there. So it comes back to Krishna's law. So to take any other approach, even if you're, you know, want to apply Yukta Vairagya, if you take any other approach than what Rupa Goswami mentions here, you will fail. Guaranteed. 100% guaranteed. Money back. Like that. You know? Excuse me. Money back? No, maybe. Faith back. You get the faith that you have in the modern thing, you'll get back. When it fails, you know, technically it's called throwing it back in your face, you know, but, you know, you'll get it back. So therefore, Rupa Goswami is saying, no, you have to follow these things, because it's the proper Vedic knowledge. You follow that, you apply that in your life, then you get a result. Since Krishna is revealing himself, he only reveals if you follow the path that he gives. You can't do something else, you know, it's like, what do you call it? You had that Ramakrishna, like that, excuse me. You had some foolish Bengali pujari, you know? So then, because in the scriptures it mentions all these different rules on passing urine, you know, standing, that you squat, and then you don't face this, you don't face that, you don't this and that, and so many things. And so then, one day it's out, and there were so many different things going on that it was hard to figure out which direction to use. So then, while standing up and jumping up and down and spinning around spinning, then he was passing urine and saying that there's so many rules that, you know, which one, so, you know, how can we figure it all out, you know? So it means you can do that. It's been done by great personalities. You know, but whether you want to take these personalities as optics, you know, that these are the authorities. So it can be done. You know, that's the fun part, is that the material world, even though nothing's new, everybody's under the illusion that it is new. You know, That's the fun part. So people are thinking that what they're doing is new and unique and no one else is doing, but it's like millions of people are doing it and they've always been doing. There's nothing different. Nothing different. These books have to be received through the channel of the disciplic succession, parampara, so you can't just read them yourself, come up with your own ideas. In other words, to learn the science of bhakti, one must accept a guru coming in disciplic succession for Krishna. To understand the Bhagavad Gita, for example, one should accept it just as Arjuna did, from Krishna or his representative, in a mood of submission and service. Right? So that's the whole point. The spirit of it is how it has to be taken. Not, okay, that's all nice, but it's actually, this is the mood. So therefore we have to adjust. See, because Arjuna's mood is there, and therefore he accepts it in a particular way. You change the mood, you change how you accept it. So that's why the first thing Prabhupada talks about in the introduction to the Gita, you know, of all the different elements that are important, is the spirit. You have to have the right attitude. That with that, then you can approach. So if you have the wrong attitude, you can't approach it. Because it's revealed. It's the foolishness is to think, no, I'm intelligent, I'll understand it. No, you won't. I mean, so many people, you know, it's like, what do you call it? Prabhupada always quotes Dr. Radha Krishna. You know? There was one very scholarly, very intellectual, but somehow or another very foolish president of India, like that. He wasn't president?
Vice president.
He was vice president.
Vice president.
So whatever, you know, so, and very respected scholar and this and that, you know, and so, but he couldn't understand it. You know, he made a translation and a commentary on Gita, and then, you know, just another
it's mental speculation.
Yeah, it's mental speculation, just another wasted effort. So that's the thing, the mood is wrong, because it's a matter of, always, you know, he's the one famous, it's not about Krishna, it's about the unborn within Krishna. So the spirit's changed, so therefore everything will change. So that's why we have to be very careful. You can say, oh no, but it's the modern world, we have to be careful. You have to catch the spirit, otherwise then you'll end up being just like, as Prabhupada told Guru Kripa, another face in the crowd. Just another face. You know? That's all. So many faces, like Arjuna seeing the universal form, full of faces. So it's just another face. Right? And then they're all dead, and then... Yeah. Well, the face stays. It's just the names change. You know, like sometimes you see these things when they have photographs of people from 50 years ago, 100 years ago, or something like that. The exact same face. So there's a thing. It's just out of the universal form. He has the karma. He gets that face. But he has a different name, different everything. So. No?
So it actually seems that the faith is the most important.
Faith, yes. But that faith has to be faith based on actual knowledge, actual religion.
So it's not the faith, it's the faith?
Yeah, it's not the face, it's the faith. Yeah, I mean, I don't think the saying was keep the face. Keep the face, yeah. No?
Well, according to the faith, you get a different type of faces.
Good face, okay, yeah. Faces, different faces, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Like that. Get caught up in all kinds of funny references. Yes. Okay. So as Arjuna did, in a mood of submission and service, right? It's mission and service. But Arjuna is part of the disciplic succession because the disciplic succession had been broken and the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita had been lost. Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita again to Arjuna. So if you understand the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna as Arjuna understood them, your understanding will be perfect. But if you invent some imaginary meaning for the Bhagavad Gita, you are wasting your time. Don't waste your time, right? Because like in the acharyas, they'll use the term direct meaning, indirect meaning, and the, you know, confidential meaning, right?
Yeah,
hidden or confidential, like that meaning. So they never use the term literal meaning. They absolutely never use it. In fact, of all the different ways you look at Shastra, the literal meaning is the sixth. It's the last of options. It's considered the lowest. Right? Because you have to know the spirit. That only then you can take what has to be done. You know, just like, let's say, take for example, there was one they had, I forget where it was. It was in Vrindavan. Might have been Vrindavan. But I'm not sure. Bhakti Churmash was serving Sri Prabhupada. He would take care of, you know, what he would eat, and also medicines and those kind of things. So I think in the afternoon, then Prabhupada would have some fruit juice. But somehow it's supposed to come at a particular time. It should probably be very regular. It happened at that time. Somehow the Bhakti Churmash was late. So he's bringing in the cup of juice. You know, it's a small cup. You know, because when you take in the afternoon, if you take a little bit of fruit, even though you haven't digested lunch, it will help digest lunch. But if you take a lot, then it'll just, you know, be more stuff to digest. So it's a very small amount. So you're just taking a small cup of juice. And so then he's coming in with this juice, but he's late. And Prabhupada's saying, you know, it's mentioning it late, no, you don't need it, I don't want it, and this and that. Telling him to go. It's like that. And Bhakti Shumar just keeps very slowly coming forward. Just inching forward. And Prabhupada, the whole way while he's walking, is just saying, yes, no, forget it, I'm not interested. Like just completely just telling him to take the juice and go. And he just keeps coming slowly, and just putting it right on the desk in front of Srila Prabhupada. You know, and then standing there. And Prabhupada just looks at him, picks up the juice, drinks it, and then, you know, he
Bengali.
Yeah. I mean, two Bengali aristocrats. They're both from the same social status, so they know what's going on. You know, so then he's there's the spirit that he wants it, and the reason he's upset is because he does want it because of the benefits that are there, because Prabhupada's point is that, you know, if the digestion's there, you have energy. If you have energy, you can do your service. Digestion's not there, so this is one of the things that would help, just like the morning walk. I think he was getting very upset in Prabhupada got put in quarantine for 3 weeks because the secretary forgot to get the papers for vaccinations and all that.
Pre-COVID, huh?
Hmm?
Pre-COVID stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, before you used to have to get this this little booklet that you know, yellow fever, and I can't remember what it was. Yeah, all these different things. You had to have this little booklet if you wanted to come back into India. If you went out to any place, especially certain places. So if you went to Africa, you had to have this. I can't remember if it was some other place. I think also to the Orient, you had to have it. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, so like that. So the secretary thought, you know, what's the big deal? And he didn't get it. So when Prabhupada came in, then at immigration, they said, where's the thing? He didn't have it. They put him in quarantine. So he and Bhavananda Maharaj were in quarantine together. And Prabhupada's there, and there's a little window there, and out the window he can see a park, and he can see people walking around in the park. Prabhupada's very upset and says, here I can't walk. If I don't walk, then it doesn't mean that I attain the health. If that's not there, then the digestion goes. If that goes, then I can't, you know, translate the books. And if I don't translate the books, what's the point? You know, so Prabhupada was, you know, so Prabhupada, you know, wanted these things to go on, but at the same time, he was chastising because he's late. So in this way, Prabhupada got the juice, and Bhakti Churumaraj understood, don't be late. There are no excuses. So, yeah. Don't waste your time. Try to understand Krishna as he is, as he describes himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? So that's the point. As he is means how Krishna describes himself, not as he is how you think it. It's not Shakespeare. It's not as you like it. Right? It's just, it's as he is. If God says, I am like this, why are you wasting your time manufacturing ways and means to understand God differently? Krishna is canvassing you. I am God. Here is my name. Here is my address. Here are my activities. End quote. Everything is proved, provided. Why don't you understand God from God? Why are you manufacturing your own ways to understand him? The Krishna conscious movement is not presenting some manufactured way to understand God. It is simply presenting the standard way. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Man manab hava man pakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Bhagavad Gita 18:65. Quote, think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and bow down before me. End quote. And we are teaching the same thing. It is not difficult to follow this process. Anyone can do it. Sometimes people say that I have done something wonderful by spreading the Krishna conscious movement all over the world. But all I have done is present Krishna as he is. That is the secret. So anyone can understand Krishna as he is from the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and make his life perfect. Otherwise, any process you may invent for understanding God is simply a useless waste of time. Chapter 7, Dharma, the Way of Transcendence. Yeah. So Prabhupada's point is, it's spreading because you're doing it the way Krishna wants. You know, others can say, no, but we have also so many followers, but strangely enough, they got their followers from the ones who followed what Prabhupada said. They didn't go out on the street, present their you know, particular invented imaginary ideas of Krishna consciousness, and then pick people up off the street. They simply took people who are already had followed Prabhupada, had become devotees, and then convert them into whatever they want to. So that makes sense. So that's because it doesn't work. Right? And we see the areas that go more with imaginary meanings on the graphs, they're going down, and the areas that follow more the traditional, they're going up. Because it's Krishna's. You follow what Krishna says, it works. It's his thing. And you don't, it goes down. Does that make sense? It's pretty. I mean, if you want, you know, science and it's obvious, there it is. By bhakti in the form of prema, the cultivation of having a taste for topics of the Lord, the devotee sees this truth in his pure consciousness, atmani. What to speak of knowing it? They directly perceive or realize it. This truth is the shelter of the Swarup Shakti, Jiva Shakti and Maya Shaktis, Atmanam. The bhakti is served by jnana and vairagya, which arise from it, right? So jnana and vairagya arise from bhakti and serve bhakti, right? So they're very useful because they serve bhakti, but they only become valuable when they're used in service to Krishna. Yes?
These four stages, this is bhakti sandharma?
Yes, I mean any in the bowl that's all the way full width, that's the bhakti sandharma. Okay. So you see this is all part of this. Anucheta 7. What is knowledge of truth? Tattvajnana. Like that. You know, so he's describing that Vedanti Tattva Vidas. So this is further. Yeah. So it's through bhakti produces these and then they're used in bhakti service. So the opportunities for service to Krishna are produced by bhakti. Then you engage what's produced in Krishna's service. Like through bhakti you get facilities, then you, like let's say through bhakti, then the devotees have a temple. Now the temple is used in the Lord's service. Right? If it's not used in the Lord's service, they just use it to collect money or something, like you see sometimes that Madhur Puja, there's anything there, and the next thing you see somebody there doing puja, but it's to collect money. Right? Because if they don't get money, they're not doing puja. The sages see and attain this entity in either of the two ways, without manifestation of its shaktis or with manifestation of its shaktis. Right? So through jnana and vairagya, then they are attained, means through bhakti, then jnana and vairagya come. Then by engaging this jnana and vairagya, then they attain that supreme who is the shelter of bhakti and jnana and vairagya. So either through the detachment, you know, means using knowledge and not external facilities, and the other is by using the facility, the external facilities, in with knowledge. Does that make sense? So one is using knowledge with detachment. One you're using the facilities with that detachment knowledge. They both are using that detachment and knowledge. Just where the emphasis is. So one is using karma. One's using jnana. The words Shruta Grihitaya, Munayaha, and Shraddhana show that bhakti is hard to attain. By hearing the conclusions of all scriptures and from an authorized guru, one attains it. Thus, hearing from the guru is understood to be the most necessary practice for the individual. Right? One has to hear from that authority. Once that's there, then the process starts to work best. Then this is quote from Srimad Bhagavatam: the great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration of the mind, studied the Vedas 3 times, and after scrutinizingly examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.34. Right? Because religion means the character or the inherent nature of something. Right? So then the highest, so therefore that's religion. So the highest religion is the following the nature of the aspect of service to Krishna. Right? So that attraction to Krishna. So all these different things, by being engaged, if you can develop attraction for the Supreme Lord, that's actually the perfection of religion. Because it's only through expressing that attraction that it brings you to the platform of prema. Does that make sense? So. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Sri Sukadeva Goswami is referring to the highest Vedic authority, Lord Brahma, who is the qualitative incarnation of Godhead. The Vedas were taught to Brahmaji in the beginning of the material creation. Although Brahmaji was to hear Vedic instructions directly from the personality of Godhead, in order to satisfy the inquisitiveness of all prospective students of the Vedas, Brahmaji, just like a scholar, studied the Vedas 3 times, as generally done by all scholars. He studied with great attention, concentrating on the purpose of the Vedas, and after scrutinizingly examining the whole process, he ascertained that becoming a pure, unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the topmost perfection of all religious principles. So, you see here, he's talking on the purpose of it, rather than just on the detail. The knowledge is there for, it's a medium, right? Either karma or jnana. It's a medium for that. But it's actually the purpose of developing that love for Krishna. That's actually then perfection of religion. Yes, please.
So this is like the Shravana, Manana, Dhyasana. Those are the 3 things. So Manana, contemplation, means actually contemplating on the conclusion of the scripture.
Because when you read the first time, you're just hearing, you don't know what's going on. The second time you go through, now you're familiar, so now you can contemplate and not, you know, and look more at what's going on. Then the third time, then it'll be about realization, because now you've made that connection. Then you see, it's just like, as we go through, you start seeing the purports from before as, okay, some knowledge is given, oh, there's some interesting points here, but then you know, as time goes, then you start seeing that, no, the essence of all Siddhanta is given here, the realization of all these things, the practical application is being given. Like that. So it's just a matter of what's there. I mean, as you deal with it, as you serve in that attitude, then Krishna reveals. And so that's why then every time you read, you get a deeper and deeper understanding, because it's further and further service. So this idea, I read it, I'm done. Then no. Well, not in the scholarly field. In the scholarly field, it goes through three times. So, yeah, that's nice. It means you're going through the first time that you're learning, you know, and then you start teaching it, then that's the second time you do, and then you go around again and teach it again. That's nice to do that. That way you do that time. Or you study it on your own. What?
Or teach to your teachers.
Yeah, or teach to the teachers. You know, they say, if you can't teach, teach the teachers.
They say usually,
you can
understand teaching.
If you can't understand teaching.
No, if you can't understand that teacher, then you will understand.
Oh, that's there. That's there. Yeah, yeah. But this is, that's an American thing. If you can't teach the teachers. That's one. Or the other one is, you can't teach P.E.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
a That's pretty straightforward. Just get out there and yell at the kids a bit while they run around the track, and then see they don't kill each other when they come back into the locker room.
Back.
I see. Okay. We'll be back.
And if you cannot make money, teach MBA.
Yeah, teach the MBA how to make money, right? Yeah, yeah. Well, technically, you can't make money, but you're teaching people that also can't make money how to assist those who do make money, so then you get paid. And since the guys who can make money appreciate having people that kind of know how to work with them, therefore the MBA teacher gets paid.
So you're teaching the shooters some of the questions.
Yeah, basically it means you can't make money because you're a Brahmin, but you can teach the shooters how to assist the Vaishyas making money, therefore then the Vaishya feels, you know,
obliged,
and then he, in his graciousness, then, you know, throws a little bit to the Brahmin.
The education system.
Yes, yes. As long as they produce people that help the corporate world, then that's fine. It means directly or indirectly. It means you can also, they can also work as, you can also teach more teachers who can, you know, teach more people, because the more shooters you have, the better. Or it can also be those, because these guys have to be governed, so they can also be useful in government and stuff like that, in the political field, like that. So then, you know, in some way you're assisting the corporate world, then those subjects and opportunities remain.
The only thing that I was saying is, on the way out of university, they were telling them, and don't forget Mother Yale.
Mother Yale, yes.
You're supposed to bring some contribution.
Oh yeah. Now, as you go out and you become professional, make so much money, don't forget the, what is it, Alma Mater? There's one thing I'm not quite sure. Maybe if there's a connection or not, because you have Alma Mata. But if you have Alma Mati, then it's a city in Kazakhstan. It has to do with apples. So I wonder if it started there, and then they just, you know, due to grammar, they didn't know, and so it became, you know, in Greek or in Latin, it became so.
I see
Because
it's why
Kazakh people consider that Attila came from Kazakhstan to Europe and since they started civilization.
Oh, okay, so civilization started. Civilization started from Adam and Eve, right? And Adam and Eve only got kicked out of the garden, then you had the material situation start. That means you had to have an apple tree, because otherwise it wouldn't get kicked out. So therefore, the place of apples, or the mother of apples, then is the place where it all started from. Yeah, okay. Now it makes sense. So.
Our government will pay
the money. To prove that this is it, that that all mati is...
Because they always find him for some books, right? It's the beginning of the
meditation. Yeah, yeah. So then all mati si kazak, then is the source.
Many will disappear.
Well, it can't start in America because only Johnny Appleseed introduced apple trees into America. So they can't claim it started over there.
Some say there is nothing to do with Adam and Eve.
Nothing to do with Adam and Eve? Means they're the ones that ate the apple. Maybe if there wasn't Adam and Eve, you hadn't eaten the apple, how would you have gotten Abraham? Right? Abraham's the beginning. Yeah, but if you ask others, they'll say Moses is the beginning. Others will say Christ is the beginning. And others than that will say Martin Luther's the beginning. And others will say Elon Musk is the beginning.
That's
or actually, it's actually, no, that they haven't said that. Springsteen?
Springsteen?
The guitar guy.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, they said he's God. So.
He was born in the USA.
Was it Bruce? No. It's Eric Clapton.
Eric Clapton
is God. Yeah. So then, you know, it would start there. Yeah, some would probably say started there.
Some say Bob Marley.
Bob Marley? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with Marley, you do have the strong point because the other guy's guitar. You know, or like that. But Marley, you do have a tree. You do have a tree that's essential in his existence. So then there'll be more of a connection with Adam and Eve. You know, it's about the fruit of that tree.
Well, Jimi Hendrix did display his universal form.
Jimi Hendrix did display it. So there's all kinds of places, and that's just from what we know. And then I'm sure if you go over, who knows? I mean, say if you go to the Far East and the Yellow Emperor, then he was the one who started culture and everything like that. And, you know, in the Middle Kingdom. You know. So in other words, so does that mean then? If that's there, because that's the Middle Kingdom, does that mean the hobbits are actually from China?
Yeah, sure.
They have TV series.
Oh, they went back and decided to use the set again. Okay. Yeah, these days you get too much into the social issues and it bounces back and you get beached. Okay. And this is the last, this is the last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita directly presented by the Personality of Godhead. So Krishna's directly said this, so then, you know, it should be taken as appropriate. The Veda conclusion is thus accepted by all acharyas, and those who are against this conclusion are only Vedavada Ratas, explained in the Bhagavad Gita. 242. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.234 purport. Right, so Vedavada Ratas means they're studying the Veda, but they don't understand the conclusion. They get caught by the secondary principles that are given in the Veda and get distracted. So let alone, as we saw before, is by that logical point, is that if you've thrown out a higher thing, we automatically the lower things. So those who get caught up by karma and jnana, you know, on the platform of manamoya and vijnanamoya, if they've missed the point, let alone people on anamoya and pranamoya, it's just automatically understood. So it's only if you understand in the context of anandamaya, pure bhakti, that's the goal. Then you engage your position in manamoya and vijnanamoya in the Lord's service, then that will take you towards the Lord and towards pure bhakti. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because you could say, but if you can do that, why can't you use the lower two? Then it's mentioned that Krishna doesn't descend down that far. He only descends, as lowest he descends is down to the level of manamoya. He's accepting and following the laws of God, even though it's not about
so much God's important, it's just it's his laws and you follow them, you get the benefit. So only if anamoy and pranamoy are connected to those laws, then you get benefit from those activities. That they'll be, you know, so otherwise karma and jnana are already the secondary. So then those, if they're by being connected to bhakti, right? Otherwise they're also a waste of time. Then if you take anamoy and pranamoy, connect them to the secondary, then them as tertiary, then they also give some benefit. So it's indirect of the indirect. You know, so you get some benefit. But if it's not connected, then those activities you actually don't, they're not devotional. You know, some other aspect has to be there, you know, that you know, that maintains the devotees, but you, it's just you're reducing your field that you can engage in Krishna service. So it's not actually efficient. It's not very efficient. Okay. If there is qualification for contemplation, manana, and then absorption in contemplation, which make one give up all other conflicting thoughts, then those with faith can develop bhakti through worship. Right? So then through contemplation, right? And then by absorbing, you contemplate, and then from contemplating you start to see, okay, how it's working in that. Then you start to absorb yourself in that. How to apply it, how does it work, the different situations and all those. Then, that absorption, then you give up other conflicting thoughts because you've seen how it practically works. You can see. Otherwise, in the beginning, you're not sure, how do I apply that? Let's apply it this way, that way. So that aspect that we were talking before of Tarka. You're analyzing through the inference. Okay, if you apply it like this, is it working like this, this, until you see what actually works. Then, having done that, now you're convinced, right? You give up other conflicting thoughts. Then you see, okay, Shastra says this, this is how I'll apply it. And then with that, then with that faith, you can develop bhakti. But if you think, no, but this could work, and that could work, and what about that one, and yeah, I've heard about this one, and all these things, then that faith won't develop to that strength. It means there's faith in Krishna, but unfortunately not necessarily Krishna's instructions or the devotees. Right? You know, it's limited. You only pick and choose what you want, rather than taking what actually, you know, the whole thing as it is given. You know, that's the meaning of as it is given, not you know, some other speculative aspect. Yeah? Or something? Vriti. The next anucheta shows that the goal of following Varnashram Dharma is engaging oneself in the loving service of the Supreme Lord. Right? So now he's established that it means you follow the Shastras, and then the essence of the Shastras is developing love for Krishna. And then karma and jnana, which are always taken as those as major elements within the Vedic society, then they're actually only secondary items for bhakti. Does that make sense? And as we mentioned, the artha and kama, those are then tertiary to that, because the point is artha is just so that you have facility. Right? So it's only a support of. Like Prabhupada is saying that nowadays people go out and make money, and then with money buy food. But Prabhupada's pointing out that's not very intelligent. Animals just without money get food. They don't you don't see a whole market going on. You know, it's like there's this whole you know, you go down the street and there's this whole, you know, there's a whole bunch of, you know, tables put out and there's a whole bunch of fat cats sitting behind it like that. And then, you know, there's like, you know, like you go to the market and you see, you know, a huge big basket of apples, so you just see a big pile of rats. You know, or something like that, or mice, you know, depending upon, you know, like that. And, you know, city rats, country rats, mice, you know, all the different things like that. And then the other cats are coming along and trading.
Cage rats.
Yeah, you know, so many different things like that. And cage rats, you know, if you want a little bit more excitement during dinner and stuff like that, or if you want to, you know, just... So, you know, no, they just go out and catch the rat. So the Prabhupada is saying is that it's so full. Why would you work to make the money to buy food when you could just, with the same work, actually less work, grow your food? It's actually less work. The farmer, the actual time he spends growing food is way less than the man who goes out to make money to buy food. Because you plow, then you plant, right? Then you wait. Then you weed, then you wait, then you harvest. You know? Then you deal with it. But you have food. You're dealing with food. So it's actually direct. So Prabhupada's saying human society means it's direct. You directly have the things. So then you don't have to worry. And even if you do deal, then it's through something that has a value. You know, gold, silver, because you're growing food. This other guy says, you know, he has silver and that. You want the ornaments. So then you trade food for that. You know, but you're working in things that have value rather than pieces of paper with faces on them. Yes. The middle of New York.
Desert.
Oh, I was going to say middle of New York. They could also farm that. It's quite a lot of land there. They're a desert.
Yes.
Well, I think traditionally they would farm sheep. Huh? Yes. I mean, look, they weren't eating oil. They weren't eating pearls. And definitely they're not eating sand, right? So what are they eating?
Yes.
Huh?
Apples.
Apples. Okay, then no problem. So many things you can do with apples, right? Eat them fresh, you can dry them, you can make them into cakes and bread. The idea of the desert is it's not an ideal place. It's not considered that one would be comfortable there. Means it's a particular mentality. So then they like it there, so they stay there.
It literally means people left it. Desert. They deserted it.
Yeah, deserted. Desert. Yeah, everything deserted. Desert. Because it's just the animals, everything left. But yeah, so it's just rain doesn't come, so then the things don't grow, and then they find some way to live. But the point is, but you can, means if you look at it, there are people. I mean, I've directly seen, and I've also seen, you know, documentaries on people who go in and they start growing trees and watering and that, mm-hmm. and then it's not desert anymore.
The whole country's
there. Yeah. Small. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it. You go along, you can see those who plant, it's all green and everything, and those who don't, it's still desert. It's the same land.
Our soil is very salty unless you grow, you need to buy the soil. It's more expensive than to buy fruits and food grown.
Buy soil.
The soil is very bad.
But you put things into the soil. That's why whatever you don't use goes back into the soil. Krishna's arranged it so nicely. Is that just like what when we grow things, what we eat, we take. What we don't eat from what we grow, that's what the animals eat. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, let's say you have a cabbage. That middle part you eat, but everything around it and the stem and this and that, the cows, they love it. I mean, they'll eat also what you eat. But, you know, it's like you grow the grains, the rice or the wheat. You eat the grains, but the whole stem and all that, the cows eat that. And so this way, then that goes back into the land. So if you're always doing like that, then it maintains. It's just people stop doing that. Because I'm sure if you look back in history, why is it there's so much of a civilization there if the land's bad? Right? But if you go back in time, you'll find that there were a particular group of living entities who rode around on short horses who, wherever they went, they just killed everything in sight and took everything and went on to the next one. So then you kind of end up that you may not have as many farmers and that as you want. Everything falls apart. You know? And they probably don't have people to bring in from somewhere. Because they did that in Europe, in Hungary. They came in, because I think some of their people had settled there. As we go down to Budapest, down to the center of the city, there's a square there, and they have these huge stone statues of the founding fathers of the place, all on their little ponies, like that. And so then they set up there, and it was very thriving, and then I think 400 years later, someone decided, hey, let's go check out what our cousins are up to. But when they got there and found that they were Christians, then they killed 90% of the population. Probably the 10% is what escaped. So in other words, if it was still on the land there, they killed it. And so then then they had to import people from all of Europe. They just said, hey, you know, there's villages, everything's here, and there's no people. You can come here and you don't have to pay for it. You know, you don't have a house in your place, come here, there's a free house, you can get two. So then they all came in, and so then they started again. But probably in Central Asia, they couldn't exactly do that. No rain. Yes, so that's why then Harinam Sankirtan. You should try that. Because they did that in Hyderabad. They were saying they're having a drought. And Prabhupada mentioned this is Harinam Sankirtan. So then they... And maybe that's why there's no rain. So then, if you do look back, is the area, the desert areas, then those are generally, traditionally, according to scriptures, of those who are very much opposed to the Vedic literature. Then they end up in those places. Because the thing is like you're saying, it's through worship of the Lord, you know, through the, at least in this age, through the Sankirtan, chanting the holy name, then you're going to get rain. And then from that, then you get everything else. So, but if they oppose the Vedic version, then they may not. But even if they get out there and just, there's no song, maybe bring in a bunch of Sufis and have them start doing kirtan or something and see if it changes. They're also forbidden. So anything that will bring rain is forbidden. Okay. So then the other option is, if you appreciate that, you know, following those things that will bring rain, but nobody else does, when you, how you say, you know, go through all your things, pick out what's very, very important to you, put them in a bag, buy a ticket, and go to a place that they do allow you to do those activities that bring rain. Yeah? You know, that's a means, and then you're just, I mean, of course, you're not necessarily helping the original situation, because as Prabhu said, is the desert is called desert because everything deserted it, you know. Does that make sense? You know, that, like even camels don't hang out just where it's sand, they hang out where there's water. So. Yeah, what to do? Because I mean, it's just that's the laws, and so you go against that. Because you can see is that before they didn't have that problem, and there was so much civilization. You know, you had the Buddhist civilization before that, the Hindu civilization. So it was a very vibrant area. You know, like that. And so depending upon how they deal, then it goes more down. You know? But you had, I mean, at least I remember that. Maharaj, when he was there, he started a whole farm project and was growing things and everything there. Yeah, so but you have to start planting trees around the edges and slowly. There's small little documentary or something on one guy. He planted like 50,000 trees. Someplace that was just barren, and then you look now, it's this whole lot, because once it starts, everything starts. Yeah. So it's just, you do it, it works.
But there are trees that grow in the desert, those big trees.
Yeah, so just plant more of those. Because you see, areas where it's like just form of those, then underneath generally something more is happening, because leaves fall and birds come and things start happening. Just figure out, you know, what's the ideal distance. I would expect it so the leaves don't touch. Somehow the trees don't like it when the leaves touch.
They like salty soil. That's what they love.
Okay.
That's what they love
salty soil. Also olives, they seem to, but they like more rocky, I think. Rocky.
Nothing else on the mountain. It's not the desert.
Yeah. So if it's on the sides of the mountain where it's all rocky, then plant the olive trees, and down in the valleys where there's nothing, then plant fig trees. Yes. Goodwill to all men. Right. No. Yeah. Or start doing kirtan. Yeah. So probably when Prabhupada did that kirtan, I think he had the governor of the state there. He probably had, you know, the, you know, officials from the Hyderabad city there. They all went out to the Harinam. I don't know how long they were doing. It started to rain. Just went out of the kirtan and it started raining. Yeah. Means if they actually found that it did rain, I'm sure that everybody would start doing kirtan. You know, nothing else. At least it just brings the rain. You know? Okay, so now this is about, so as we mentioned, we have that the Vedic means you have to understand things from the Veda. The essence of the Veda is devotion to the Lord, to attach that. That's the highest religion. So therefore then, and that generates karma and jnana. So now we're starting to see, okay, how does karma and jnana is engaged in Lord's service? We're connected, right? Does that make sense? We see so the logic going through. So now he's going to start with the Varnashram, you know, as the karma, as the karma aspect of when you have karma and jnana, they're coming from bhakti, right? Shruti Anucheda 8. Shruti explains the same fact. Atma vare drashtavya shrotavyo mantavyo nididhyasitavya. The Lord should be seen, heard, thought of, and worshipped. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 2446. Nididhyasana means worship, and seeing means meeting directly. So it's going through all these aspects. Shravanam, you know, means you go, just like it says in the Gita, that this the result of this can be seen. Right? Because the sages see this. You hear about it, you contemplate it, then you practice it, then you can see it.
Tattvadarshi?
Yeah, Tattvadarshi, but there's also, what is that? Kasanta. I can't remember. It's, he's talking about it should be seen. Krishna's saying this understanding should be seen. You know, it means you practice it until you see it, because that's the Vedic thing, is that I hear about it, I contemplate it, I'm convinced of it, I apply myself, I get the realization, so I'm being absorbed. Then I will see the results. Like I hear about Krishna's everything, so then I read the Vedic literature, how Krishna's everything. I contemplate, start how it is like this, and then with time I start to see everything you look at, you can see something about Krishna there.
Therefore,
it's
Vedanta Darshan.
Sorry?
Therefore,
yes, Vedanta Darshan. Yeah, Darshan is the word. Okay, that rare bhakti is attained even from performing one's dharma, if dharma is endowed with pleasing the Lord. Right? So, once it gets to there, it may be a secondary aspect, but because it's connected with pleasing the Lord, then it takes on those qualities. Right, it'll give you that result. So, yeah. pleasing the Lord is the highest result of Dharma, right? Because Brahma said developing that attraction to the Lord, and that attraction means then you want to serve and please, right? Because the attraction will be the first, then you act, and then you then please the Lord, right? So then, if that's the highest religion, that means then the perfection of Varnashram, which is known as religion, is pleasing the Lord. Atav Pumbir Dvija Shreshta Varnashrama Vibhagasaha Svanushvitasya Dharmasya Samsidhir Haritoshanam. O best of the Brahmanas, the complete perfect perfection of Dharma according to divisions of Varnashram by men is pleasing the Lord. So that pleasing the Lord, that's the actual key part. It's not that you're performing all these different things nicely, that's what pleases the Lord. Right? That's also a mistake. That's what was shown in the previous one, is that you just get a Veda Vadarata. So you don't want to get that. So it means, I think it's, what is Niyamagraha is following the rules and Niyamagraha is giving up. I was going to forget which is which. Whatever it is. One of them means that they're following so much it's about the rules and they forget what it's for. Right? And it's a common thing. You see the Vedic, as we mentioned before, when you said about the Sadducees, then the one who started that group, it was about, you know, developing love for God, and so then they would be very strict about following everything nicely to do everything to please God. But with time they became Veda Vadaratas and they just were about the rules and regulations, forgot about pleasing God. So it's just from doing these things you get benefit, right? It means I do things properly according to the rules, I get facility. That facility I'm using in the Lord's service. Right? So then with time they just thought, I do this because it's God's laws, I get the facility and I enjoy that. Rather than, no, that's supposed to be given to the Lord also. I'm doing the work for Krishna, I get the results, and that's offered also for Krishna. So then it's very, very standard. You know? Does that make sense? You know, that Catholic is, I mean, the literal meaning is that it's about all accommodating. You know, it's inclusive. Like that. But then you see with time, it's just so strict on the rules and not necessarily accommodating anyone. Not even other Christians. You know, so let alone others. So, you know, so that's the thing, is one has to be very careful about that. So even Varnashrama, its purpose is to please the Lord by engaging your nature and the facilities, you know, in context of that nature. But if we take it, no, unless it's followed like this, then you can't have bhakti. It's the same mistake as, oh, if you don't have modern morality, you don't have bhakti. One's pious, one's impious. Does that make sense? You know, or it's pious because you're following God's laws. One's quasi-pious because they at least try to follow some rules, but they made up the rules in the beginning. It's like kids, they make up a game and then follow those rules to play the game, though it actually has nothing to do with the original game. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Human society all over the world is divided into four castes and four orders of life. He mentioned all over the world, because all over the world, if you talk about them in their generic form, you know, in the principle, everybody will agree that's how it works. It doesn't matter. You know? The four castes are the intelligent caste, the martial caste, the productive caste, and the labor caste. These castes are classified in terms of one's work and qualification and not by birth. Right? Then again, because that's the whole point, it's when it's by birth, then that's where the problem comes up. Right? But if it's by qualification, then that means it's equal opportunity. For if you have the qualification. If you don't have the qualification, how can you say, I will do this? You're not qualified.
The Maharaj seems now even this is a problem.
Yes.
When you say this is an intelligent class, my qualification is not my problem. Even this is a problem.
Yeah. Well, now it's like you can't say that anybody's anything. So then what is it? Okay, then everybody's a bunch of, what was that stuff called? Oobleck? I don't remember. I think it's part of Dr. Seuss. It's an oobleck. Just a mushmash. Yeah, I mean, it's just, then what is everybody? Just, you know, just a
it's funny because when you're just talking terms, like, they don't want to hear the word intelligent class because then that implies that everyone else is less intelligent.
Right.
But if they have a heart problem, they're going to go to a heart surgeon because he's a heart surgeon. They're not going to go to, you know, the guy who mows your lawn.
Yeah.
It's not that they don't. It's not that they don't understand that there should be, you know, discrimination between two different classes. It's just that they don't like the terminology because it offends them.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like you're saying that I'm less intelligent than a doctor. Well, okay.
Everybody's less intelligent than someone else, like Prabhupada says about the cobbler.
Right.
He fixes shoes. You can bring the biggest, you know, PhD, you know, with all the, you know, whatever it is, bells and whistles that go along with it, the most decorated academic on the world, sit him down there, give him hand in the shoes and those funny little hammers that they use and say, fix it. And he can't. So that means when it comes to shoes, then the cobbler is more intelligent than the academic. It's just the field. So everybody has their field that they're good at. But the fields that, in other words, everybody's intelligent. And when it's intelligence applied to knowledge, you know, I mean, these scripture or these let's say literary knowledge and these kind of things and the theories, that's then going to be the intelligent class. When you apply the same intelligence to administration, you get the martial class. When you apply it to money, you get the productive class. When you apply it to skills, you get the labor class. It's just a matter of where it is, but it has to be a hierarchy. Because if the theory's not there, how can you practically apply it? So in other words, the theory is there in the intelligent class. You practically apply it in administration and production. And then those who can assist that, then it's the labor class. But, so it means you have to have this. It means it's just how anything works. You know, otherwise it'll have the rise of the cars. You know, why is it we say that people are the intelligent and they're drive? Why the drive should do it? The cars can drive themselves and all that. You know? I think that's, you know, Google's bringing about a revolution on this. The cars taking over.
They have to start calling these smartphones because that also diminishes our own intelligence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Literally, just by association.
Yes.
Now, can you actually call it a? Means now, is it a smartphone? Because because they're so much smarter than you. Because we see that people are becoming dumber by association. So, then is it because the phone's so much smarter? Therefore, then it's becoming obvious that you're stupid. Or is it by association with the phones, even though you may have been smart, you're becoming stupid? So then, can you actually call them smartphones? You know what I'm saying? By association, you associate with a thief, you become a thief. So if the result of my associating with a smartphone is I become, you know, an idiot, you know, then can I? So you know, what's it? Attention, something deficit.
Short attention deficit.
Yeah. So I mean, they start getting that, but that's coming from the phone. So. Then they should give a different name to the phone. You know, don't call it smartphone. Call it, you know, I say, loony bin phone. Or
mind shackle.
Yeah, the mind shackle phone. You know, something that, you know. Yeah, you know, something like that.
To distract the Ram.
Well, that's good. The Rama would work. But. I mean, he's like voice the other day says, I can send you this link, and they said no, I only have a dumb phone.
Yeah.
Is it, other than boys use it? Is it kind of more common in society?
Yeah.
Maybe.
The name?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, they call them the dumb phone. You have the smartphone, the dumb phone. And if you're working in the martial class. You know, either on the white side or the dark side, then they call them burn phones.
Burn.
Okay. These castes are classified in terms of one's work and qualification and not by birth.
Then again, there are four orders of life, namely the student life, the householder life, the retired, and the devotional life. That's an interesting one. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the best interest of human society, there must be such divisions of life. Otherwise, no social institution can grow in a healthy state. So that's the interesting thing, is the devotional life is the fourth one, is the sannyas. Right? But then the whole point of the whole Vedic system, this is what we're trying to get to, is everything's done for Krishna. When it's done for yourself and given to Krishna, that's called renunciation. So therefore, then, knowledge and detachment. Right? But then, you know, and yukta vairagya. But then when it's only done for Krishna, that's called sannyas. Right? So the whole goal is that everybody should be on that platform of sannyas. How they situate themselves in the ashrams, that's different. But the mentality is the same. In other words, the idea is that going through these four, ideally at some point, at least at the end, you get to the point of sannyas by mentality. But if you could get that earlier, like Prahlad Maharaj, he's already at that mentality while he's in the womb. You know, or Sukadeva Goswami also in the world. So it means it's, you know, no one can complain it's, you know, not possible. They're doing it before they're even born. You know, that would also be a strong point about abortion, right? Anti-abortion. Yeah, so.
Yeah. It can be a sentence.
Yeah. And in each and every one of the above divisions of life, the aim must be to please the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. This institutional function of human society is known as the system of Varnashrama Dharma, which is quite natural for the civilized life. So it's quite natural to say, oh no, it's not natural, we're Westerners, well this and that. But just say, instead of saying Westerners, just say uncivilized. It's for civilized human beings. It's natural for them. It's not natural for you. Just say, I'm not civilized enough to follow them. I'm not pious enough, I'm not civilized enough, I don't have enough intelligence, you know, human intelligence. I may have technical intelligence, this, that, but you know. That's the point. Stop saying, oh, it doesn't work, or this or that, or times have changed. Just stop saying all that. Just say, be scientific.
With the statement that they're beyond Varnashrama, but they're not stating which side beyond Varnashrama.
Yes,
they are.
Yes, right, yeah, beyond Varnashrama. Yeah.
<it's> difficult to accept that you are the uncivilized one.
Yes, but that's why. Yes, but that's why. I mean, there's always, just like there's always someone better than you, there's always going to be someone less than you. Doesn't matter how bad you are, someone else is in a worse position. You know? I mean, we just have to take, you know, evidence from the discussion between the four, you know, four, what do you call it, labor guys. You know, in the Monty Python sketch. You know, whatever one said, it was so bad that the next one says even worse. And then they keep going. And so you understand it's completely insane in making it up. Just to be the worst. You know, like that. So there's always going to be someone worse, there's always going to be someone better. So it's always good, but that's why then the third verse of the Shikshastaka is humility is the first thing. And humility is a symptom of knowledge. You can say it's, oh, but that's not, but you know, we have to be practical. It's a symptom of knowledge. Because you have the 20 aspects of knowledge, but the actual symptom is humility. You know, if someone actually has knowledge, if they're humble, if they're proud, they're not actually as knowledgeable as they could be. Means they may be way more knowledgeable than other people, but they haven't actually come to the point of understanding what real knowledge is. A guy may be a very big, big scholar, but he's still, his potential is much more. So only when you become humble, then the knowledge goes beyond. And real knowledge, what it's actually for. I mean, that's the whole point. So if we get back, oh, but how did, why distract? We're talking about how Varnashram is engaged in the Lord's service. You say, well, without it, we can do. Then say, okay, we can't function. We are too impious to understand Varnashram. We don't have enough motive goodness to be able to follow it. So therefore, we're working on, you know, a loosely built pranamoya model that's actually just hiding our anamoya tendencies.
you know, it's about me and my life, so it's anamaya, but I want to say I want to present it as if everybody else is obliged. In other words, it's anamaya because it's about me, right? And I'm the center of the whole thing. Now one would say, well, that's anamaya, that's low class. No, by everybody else acknowledging my rights and my position, then that places them in pranamoya. So by them connecting with me, then it becomes pranamoya. Even though I'm technically an anamoya, but I'm generating the pranamoya. No? Yeah.
It's funny that, yeah, so nobody wants to say that they're a shudra, but if you ask them, okay, the job that you do, are you willing to give up your salary, and then just if people appreciate what you're doing, they'll give you some sort of donation. Maybe, no way, are you kidding me? No, I need to feed my children and this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're doing a job for a specific salary,
yeah,
which is just the definition of
yes. And then if that's the case, and if they say, well, you know, we just have to be practical, but then be humble.
Right.
Like I remember one of the more well situated in deity worship that I've seen in the movement, always been, from what I've known, he's always been doing, always regularly doing. And at least at this time, I don't know about what's going now, but at that time he was the head pujari of the temple. But he used to work down at the local Tesco, you know, at the checkout counter. Like that. You know, because he could do that. He didn't have to do many hours. He could do it part-time. And that way he could do all his deity worship, because he'd be in morning and evening. So the day he could go out there a few days a week, make enough to maintain himself. And he was fine, you know. But if you have to do, okay. You know, sure, but you maintain humility. Well, why all this big thing is, you know, we're this and we're that and we're educated, we have degrees and we're on a committee and, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's not. It's just like, get it. Because there's a good chance the corporate world would not hire your committee, nor would any administration on the planet. So it's better to take the humble position. Okay, seems that the time has come. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Chai Shri Prabhupada. Chai.